put everything in the house back where it belonged. He would arrange the dishes in the china cabinet and line up the pots according to size, align the edges of the linen and towels, point all coffee cup handles in the same direction, reposition the bar of soap on the bathroom sink, and change the towels even if they showed no sign of having been used. Then he would gather the rubbish into a single bag, close it up, and take it out. He would adjust the time on the clocks according to his watch, which I would have been willing to bet was no more than 3 seconds out. If in the course of his cleaning he found anything the slightest bit out of place, he would put it back where it belonged with precise and elegant movements. I might test him by shifting a clock half an inch to the left on its shelf, and the next morning he would be sure to move it half an inch back to the right. In none of this behavior did Cinnamon give the impression of obsessiveness. He seemed to be doing only what was natural and right. Perhaps in Cinnamon's mind there was a vivid imprint of the way this world, or at least this one little world here, was supposed to be, and for him to keep it that way was as natural as breathing. Perhaps he saw himself as lending just the slightest hand when things were driven by an intense inner desire to return to their original forms. Cinnamon prepared food, stored it in the refrigerator, and indicated to me what I ought to have for lunch. I thanked him. He then stood before the mirror, straightened his tie, inspected his shirt, and slipped into his suit coat. Finally, with a smile, he moved his lips to say goodbye, took one last look around, and went out through the front door. Sitting behind the wheel of the Mercedes-Benz, he slipped a classical tape into the deck, pressed the remote control button to open the front gate, and drove away, tracing back over the same arc he had made when he arrived. Once the car had passed through, the gate closed. I watched through a crack in the blind, holding a cup of coffee as before. The birds were no longer as noisy as they had been when Cinnamon arrived. I could see where the low clouds had been broken up and carried off by the wind, but above them was yet another, thicker layer of cloud. I sat at the kitchen table, putting my cup down and surveying the room upon which Cinnamon's hands had imposed such a beautiful sense of order. It looked like a large, three-dimensional still life, disturbed only by the quiet ticking of the clock. The clock's hands showed 10:20. Looking at the chair that Cinnamon had occupied earlier, I asked myself once again whether I had done the right thing by not telling them about Ushikawa's visit the night before. Might it not impair whatever sense of trust there might be between Cinnamon and me, or Nutmeg and me? I preferred, though, to wait for a while to see how things would develop. What was it about my activities here that disturbed Noboru Watayasu? Which of his tails was I stepping on, and what kind of countermeasures would he adopt? If I could find the answers to these questions, I might be able to draw a little closer to his secret, and as a result I might be able to draw closer to where Kumiko was. As the hands of the clock were coming up to 11, the clock that Cinnamon had slid half an inch to the right back to its proper place, I went out to the yard to climb down into the well. I told Cinnamon the story of the submarine in the zoo when he was little, about what I had seen from the deck of the transport ship in August 1945, and how the Japanese soldiers shot the animals in my father's zoo at the same time as an American submarine was training its cannon on us and preparing to sink our ship. I had kept that story to myself for a very long time and never told it to anyone. I had wandered in silence through the gloomy labyrinth that spread out between illusion and truth. When Cinnamon was born, though, it occurred to me that he was the one I could tell my story to, and so, even before he could understand words, I began telling it to him over and over again in a near whisper, telling him everything I could remember, and as I spoke, the scenes would come alive to me in vivid colors, as if I had prized off a lid and let them out. As he began to understand language, Cinnamon asked me to tell him the story again and again. I must have told it to him 100, 200, 500 times, but not just repeating the same thing every time. Whenever I told it to him, Cinnamon would ask me to tell him some other little story contained in the main story. He wanted to know about a different branch of the same tree. I would follow the branch he asked for and tell him that part of the story. And so the story grew and grew.
In this way, the two of us went on to create our own interlocking system of